There is something that rich white women get more of than all the rest of us. It's in a news article today. Otherwise, it would just simply be answered by everything.
Yeah. A news statement. There's something rich white women don't get more of than the rest of us.
Right. What's that? 1-800-252-1025. Let's see what say ye. Adam.
Yes.
What do rich white women get more than the rest of us?
I'm going to guess tickets, like traffic tickets.
Traffic tickets? No. Why did you think traffic tickets?
I don't know, because I sit at Hunts Point every day and watch them all go by in the carpool lane. So.
I bet he's probably right.
No.
I bet he is. They can afford to get them. They don't care.
I think midlife crisis white men get all the traffic
tickets.
Yeah.
Statistically, men far outnumber women. That's right.
That's a very nice Corvette Porsche.
Well, I have no idea how fast I was going, nor do I care. How much is this going to be? It's going to take a long time.
All right. Thank you. Dan in Tacoma, what do rich white women get more than the rest of us?
I'm thinking type 2 diabetes.
Type 2 diabetes? I think that may have some truth to it. The ones who sit home, eat bonbons all day, it's likely. No, is it men?
No, actually, it's the poorer white women that would, because generally speaking, poorer people tend to eat more processed foods and more sugar.
Nice try, though. Next up.
And I think black people are more susceptible to diabetes than white.
Because they're economically disadvantaged, right. And they also eat worse food. Dave in Portland. Dave,
morning.
Hello.
Morning. I'm thinking facials, you know, like at the spa.
They get more facials. It's, I'm sure, true. At least you took a safe guess there.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can count the facials I've had on the floor.
Oh, no.
Right on, buddy.
All right, thank you. Eric thought I was making a joke. I'm not making a joke. Okay. Craig, hello.
Good morning.
I have to watch what I say. There's apparently multiple meanings there. Hello, Craig.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
All right, rich white women get more of what than the rest of us?
Plastic surgery?
Plastic surgery, I'm sure, is true, but that's not the answer we're looking for. All right.
Now, where do we get our statistic before we tell
all this is from
people?
A news article. Okay. I didn't say that you had to come up with something that rich white women get more of. I said if it's the one we're looking for.
Gotcha, because I'm sure that plastic surgery is.
And in fact, Eric, we have some Fandango bucks, too, right? Some smaller little coupons that'll get you to a movie?
Yes, absolutely.
We'll give you Zip Fizz, the healthy energy drink with the vitamins and minerals. And we'll get, so it's like dinner in a movie, except that it's just a quick vitamin shot.
In a movie.
And then go to a chick flick with your missus. The Zip Fizz will make it look like you're enjoying it. Let's see. Ooh, this is kind of harsh. I don't hope it's not true. Dennis in Seattle, what do rich white women get more than the rest of us?
Cancer.
Cancer? That's not it. Is there some reason you thought or you figured survey, study, you're going to take a wild
well,
step?
Actually, it was from an article down in the Bay Area, I believe Marin County. A lot of women were getting cancer, and they were thinking maybe it was related to dry cleaning.
Interesting.
This was from a year ago or so.
Okay, and so you read an actual article, and their theory was that women are around cleaning products.
That was one of the speculations.
Interesting.
No, all their clothes are dry cleaned, but they never do their own laundry. That's why.
That would be rich white women.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
That was a great answer.
The little
not
lady
the right.
Your shirts in the back is not susceptible to cancer, but the
right.
woman.
That's fantastic. But not true, or not the one we're looking for. It could be true.
Could be. Yeah.
You couple dry clean shirts with sitting in the sun all afternoon drinking Mai Tais.
What do rich white women get more than the rest of us, Steve?
More than half your stuff in a divorce.
They can hire better lawyers than the poor ones.
That's not the one we're looking for, but it's a great answer. Thank you. Megan, what do rich white women get more of than the rest of us?
I think they get antidepressants.
Antidepressants. Good answer.
Yes.
Them and school children, right, that they're trying to sedate. But that's not it. Thank you. I think we're ready to go to the correct answer. Is who has it? Oh, well, David, you have another good answer. What is it?
Diamonds?
Diamonds, but that's not the correct answer.
Oh.
But it's certainly true.
So right.
Next up, Joan. Joan, not the right answer, but tell them what it was.
Okay. I said marriage proposals.
Marriage proposals. Rich white women get marriage proposals.
Most of them are already married, would be my guess. But
of course they are.
Yeah, Joe. They get rich until they've said yes to somebody.
Oh, you think,
never know.
You think most rich white women
have
married
already
into their money and didn't earn it by becoming the CEO of eBay? Is that what you're suggesting?
No.
No, wait a minute. That's true.
That's what I mean. One.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go to the correct answer. Jen has the correct answer from Duval. Jen?
It's got to be sleep.
It's sleep.
Really?
Rich white women get more sleep.
That's right. Rich white women, well, women get more sleep than men. White people get more sleep than black people.
Why white people get more sleep than black people?
Well, they're not sure, although they speculate there's a few reasons. One is economics. They used to think that, like, a really highly paid CEO would be up all night worrying about his company and what's going to happen, but they found that's not the case, that the people that really worry in this world are the people who are worried about, you know, whether the rent's going to be paid.
That's people worried about money.
That's the kind of stuff that keeps you up at night.
Jen, we're going to send you some Zip Fizz healthy energy drink, and we're going to give you some Fandangle bucks to go to see a movie.
Awesome.
Hang on. White women average the most sleep. 6.7 hours a night is average?
Mm-hmm. In this study, which is about 1,000 plus people, I think they talked to.
White men average 6.1 hours a night. Black women get 5.9 hours a night. Black men, 5.1 hours of sleep. That takes a toll, man. You can't get by on 5.1 hours of sleep for any length of time, can you?
Well, you're constantly fatigued is what it is. You can physically get by, but it comes at a cost. Generally speaking, you won't live as long if you do that.
There aren't many adults in this world that get 8 hours of sleep.
I get 8 hours of sleep a night.
You're lucky.
You're a freak of nature.
Most no, I, ne- I never did for 20 years, and it finally started catching up with me, and I said, oh, that's it.
Well, you don't have, you work one job for what most African Americans have to work two, you know?
Well, I don't know about that. Oh,
okay.
I work pretty long hours.
I'm not saying you. I'm not saying you particularly, because you.
I'm not like Louis C.K.
Right.
Hey, how you doing? It's 7 o'clock. Hey, woo, look at the time.
Gotta go. Bye.
Red light's flashing.
But most African Americans have to, I would guess, on the average larger portion of them work two jobs.
If I ask you guys how much sleep you get, will you be honest, or will you think I'm the boss and you'll have to lie to me?
Mm. We don't care that much about impressing you. We'll be honest. I'll
all right,
be honest.
How many hours would you say average you get per night?
Average, I would say 6.5 to 7. Average. I try to get 8, but my brain cannot shut off when I want it to.
Believe it or not, I actually think that's probably okay when you're young. You can get away with it, but you're taking years off your life, right, Eric?
It's true. Ultimately,
great.
But you can still function. When I was your age, man. Let's not get into it. All right, Spike.
7 on average. I think 10 o'clock, 5 o'clock. It's average.
I try for 8, and when it's not daylight savings time, I succeed. But lately, I've been getting about 6.5.
Children playing outside your window again.
Well, just it's hard.
Get a shotgun. You don't have to load it. Just dangle it in the window.
That's what I mean.
Pick up on that street.
I've been getting to bed about 8, getting to bed at sleep about 8:30, getting up at 3.
If I sleep 8 hours, it's like, I swear to God to you, it's like every day is a weekend. Every day is a weekend. You know that feeling you wake up with on Saturday, all of you black men listening who are getting 9 hours a night, and you wake up and you get that one day where you can sleep, and you get like 8 or 9 hours. That feeling you wake up, first you're a little fuzzy, and then you have all this energy for the day.
Mm-hmm.
You could have that every day. You just have to put something else down. You got to decide what it is. I eliminated my family. I don't want to spend any time with them. No, I'm kidding.
Well, they all moved away.
Yeah, they were. No, but actually,
no-brainer.
In some ways, I actually spend more time with my family now than I used to when I was not sleeping well.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I know the value of sleep, and I've strived to get lots, as much as I can. I've improved greatly in that regard.
Now, there are some people with a talent. Not every person is the same. There are some people who, and that's why I would hate to put a number on that everybody should get a certain amount, because I don't know what it is for you. I know what gives me that. Whatever it is that gives you that weekend feeling on Wednesday, that's the amount of sleep you should strive for.
10 hours, huh?
Well, but see, your sleep what is it called? You're backlogged. What is it? Was the word
deprived?
For? You're operating on a sleep deficit, and that's why you need 10 hours to catch up.
And I do. I Saturdays, Sunday morning, I'll sleep till 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning.
I will too if you know people will let me. I just basically spend.
Does
my
your home. Daughter come in and jump on the bed? Daddy!
I, you know,
bring it down, freeze on, come on.
I wouldn't do a lot
I
of
want
moving.
Pancakes, come on.
I wouldn't do a lot of moving around if there was no reason to. I mean, I like being sedentary. I like sitting.
You still like that even though you're exercising?
Yeah, I like to exercise and everything because I know.
You never had a taste for exercising before.
No, and I know the energy I get from it's great and the health benefits are great. But if I could be, you know, like super healthy and buff and sit on a couch and just watch TV and eat, I'd do that too. Because, frankly, that is more fun than exercise. I mean, if
you still haven't got to the... Well, you've only been exercising for 5 or 6 months now.
Right.
Yeah. After 2 years, there will come a time when you say, this is fun. How did I ever live without this? It takes a long time, though.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
It takes a really long time, and you still have your moments, I'm just going to tell you.
Well, the beginning is hard.
Yeah.
Always. Oh, yeah.
But middle and end of exercise turn into some of the most more fun than anything else you do.
Yeah. Doing nothing is my favorite thing to do. I'll be the first to admit it.
Matthew has a theory. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, I'm a sleep technician, actually.
You're a sleep technician?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm actually going to see you guys in August.
You're going to come up and see us?
Yeah, I have backstage pass.
Oh, cool. We'll look forward to meeting you. Are you going to bring some gear and check us out?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, because that require me to bring a lot of stuff that my work wouldn't want me to take.
Got it. Okay, so as a sleep technician, what have we said so far that's total baloney? Because we might as well tell us.
The amount of sleep that you need it varies from person to person. So, I mean, whatever makes you feel good, feels good. But if you be consistent upon your bedtime and your rise time, that's probably the most important part. If you go to bed at various times, if you get up at various times, then you're knocking out your circadian rhythm.
Like that's why that's why the weekend messes people up because they complete completely different hours.
I kind of binge and purge when I sleep.
Yeah, well, so you could. That's your problem because you're not consistent. I mean, if you look at like flowers, like the sunflower, I mean, it gets up same time. You know, for the most part, it gets up with the sun and goes to bed with the sun. And so, but we have free will, and that free will can make us do whatever we want. And that free will is bad for us sometimes.
So he must not be married. He has free will.
Yeah, and like sunflowers.
Yeah, you're right.
You have a partner?
Do you have a partner of some sort? You have sunflowers, so you probably have a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So consistency, go by what makes you feel good, and keep the same circadian rhythm every night would be your top three pieces of advice. Sleep technician on the phone. We didn't even book him as an interview. That would be your top three pieces of advice for people on sleep.
Yeah, but for like kids, like adolescents and children, they need more sleep. Actually, kids in America they're all sleep deprived. They're all running on a deficit, and you can't catch up your sleep on the weekend. I mean, so like if you...
Now, wait a minute. I read an article, and it gave me faith and hope that you could get extra sleep on a weekend.
And I told you it was BS when you quoted it.
Yeah. I was the American Medical Association. I read this in. How could
they
be BS?
Publish all kinds of crap? They're run by the drug companies, right, Matthew?
Yes, they probably are, but you know, in America, okay. I think we drink too much energy.
It was St. Joseph's aspirin. I didn't think I could overdose on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Matthew. I'm sorry.
So we drink too much, like too much Red Bull, too much coffee, and if you notice now on TV, you see lots of ads for like Sonata and Ambien and those things to help you sleep because we pump ourselves up all day long with caffeine and energy drinks, and then we at night we can't sleep, so we take sleeping pills.
Lunesta.
See things. So I mean, it's just a perpetual thing. We're like the 1950s housewife, you know.
Hi, well, I'm Patrick Kennedy for Ambien. It's fantastic stuff.
Now I'm here for Amco Transmission and Mako Body Paint. Hey, you know, when Judy Garland and Marilyn Monroe would do uppers all day and sleeping pills all night long, we felt sorry for them. But now, like you're saying, now kids all day long are drinking Red Bulls and we're drinking Wired or whatever else they got in your hands on, and all night long they're taking Lunestas and Ambiens.
Yeah, it's just bad. I mean, so I think that those are some of the bad things part of about our society. And people are looking for legal ways now to go faster instead of the illegal ways, if you think about it.
Matthew, you want to take a call from a sleep-deprived guy? He saw you were on the phone, and he wants to ask you a question.
Ask me a question.
Buddy, go ahead. Talk to Matthew.
Hey, I'm actually just now getting off work and on my way home. I get about 3 to 4 hours of sleep a day. And I was actually wondering what kind of a toll does that do on a person mentally and physically?
Hoping for a good answer?
Well, let's see here. I can give you some examples of sleep-deprived people, and that'd be like the second mate of the Exxon Valdez, sleep-deprived. the people who at Chernobyl, sleep-deprived.
Oh, yeah.
You know? The guy who put the O-rings on the teacher in space shuttle, sleep-deprived.
Sleep-deprived. So the bad part about it is, like, because working the night shift, because I work the night shift, and I just got off work myself, you know, but the thing to do is try to limit yourself to the sunshine in the morning, go home and try to get as much sleep as you can, wear your plugs, nightshades.
Yeah, I mean, I live in an apartment, so I have the kids all around, and I have the sheet above my window and, you know, all that good jazz, and playing the music just to make me get to sleep because kids are loud. But.
So would you say your sleep deprivation is not because you're working too hard and it's not because of you, it's because of the environment around you?
Well, yep. Probably, but... That's just because kids are loud and can't help that.
Don't you wish you were a rich white woman right now? Think about that.
Very much so.
Put some cucumbers on your eyes, a little music in your... Hey, buddy, he mentioned all these examples. You know, you take a candle and you light the end of it. Then you turn around and light the other end of it, right? Then you take the candle, put the oven on 400, and throw the candle inside the oven. That's how you're burning your life up.
Yeah, it sort of seems like it, but, I mean, I haven't really had too much of a toll taken out on me yet. I mean... People say I'm a little weird anyways, but...
You sound young, buddy. How old are you?
I'm actually just 21.
Oh, you 21. Got years.
Oh, man, you could stay up for 3 days at that age. I did.
Yeah.
Like 2 months ago, I was working two jobs, getting about an hour and a half of sleep a night, and that was quite the rush. I mean, it was more of a high.
I'd like a brain cell damage rush. Well, if that's one way to damage brain cells, that's
the cheapest way.
Yeah. The Rockford Files, is that what that is? That's funny. All right. Before we go to Bob Steele, let's look at this article today about a resolution passed condemning the news media. Nasty news people. The House on Thursday approved a Republican-crafted resolution condemning news organizations for revealing a covert government program to track terrorist financing, saying the disclosure had placed the lives of Americans in danger. The resolution passed 227 to 183, a largely party-line vote. Didn't specifically name news organizations, but it was aimed at the New York Times. Most Democrats opposed the measure, protesting the language. For example, it was supposedly that the covert program was rooted in sound legal authority and that members of Congress had been appropriately briefed, which, by the way, all seems to be true. There was nothing really illegal about this one, which is funny because their defense is, this time we weren't breaking the law.
This time.
You know, you ever do that with your parents? This time I'm not lying to you this time.
2 weeks ago I was chunking at your phone, but not now. It's because I have lied every other time. Why would you ever expect...
Why would you suspect me?
...that history would repeat itself?
We wanted an expert opinion. I have mixed feelings on this. Part of me says, oh, come on, New York Times, don't be publishing stuff that's, you know, we're about to catch Osama, and you want to save Osama for the next Democratic president, maybe. Don't be publishing this stuff. But the other part of me says, you know what? Your government is supposed to be ticked off at the press. The press, we're supposed to be like annoying hornets buzzing around the press. They're supposed to hate us. If they hate us, we're doing our job. If they love us...
We're bootlicking.
Yeah, then we're covering up. You know, yep. Marilyn Monroe's been on the desk somewhere, mm-hmm. and we're not reporting on it. Or her current counterpart, whoever that might be.
Yeah.
That's a whole other issue, whether that's personal or private. Bob Steele is on the phone with us. Bob Steele is a professor at the Poynter Institute, teaches values and ethics in journalism. Ethics in journalism in the 21st century. Wow, there's a class for that, you might have asked yourself. We wanted to get his expert opinion on this controversial move the New York Times made, and just in general about the press, what they should report, and whether or not they should censor themselves. Bob Steele in Denver, Colorado. Hello.
Good morning to you, Bob.
Good morning. Let's start with the New York Times. Would you have voted for that resolution or against?
Based on what I know of the process the New York Times went through in deciding whether they were going to publish this story, I believe the New York Times was justified in doing so, and I would not have voted for this resolution that took place in the House yesterday. I believe that the Times was justified in their journalistic mission, and I don't think that this resolution of condemnation is logical.
Now, trying to be even-handed we are here, so is there any validity to the White House complaining? Can you empathize with them at least a little bit?
Sure. I think that it's appropriate for the White House and other members of the administration and for representatives in Congress, if they wish, to
complain all you want.
Disfavor. I don't have any problem with them doing so. I just don't agree with that position. And the New York Times made a justifiable argument about how they went about their decision-making process. Bill Keller, the editor, the top editor of the New York Times, in a letter to readers, said they weighed most heavily, his words, the administration's concern that describing this program would endanger it. Keller also said in that letter to readers that he can appreciate that other conscientious people could have gone through the process that he, Keller, outlined to his readers and came to a different conclusion. But nobody, Keller said, should think that we made this decision casually with any animus toward the current administration or without fully weighing the issues. So I appreciate and respect the challenges that come back from the administration. I appreciate and respect what the representatives in Congress are attempting to do. I just don't happen to agree with it, and I think that Bill Keller and the New York Times are representing the citizens of this country in a tried and true process that has existed over centuries here in the United States of being watchdogs on government.
Now, if the New York Times had printed, they found Osama, he lives at 1612 Mockingbird Lane, and we're picking him up Friday afternoon at 5, you would object to that, wouldn't you?
Most likely I would.
Okay. So what you don't want to see the news media help or keep, but now they say that the specificity of the facts with regards to this operation will cause them, the terrorists, to move their money in different ways and will effectively shut it down. You don't think there's any truth to that?
Well, that's a debatable point, and it's being argued significantly by members of the current administration, former members of this Bush administration and past presidential administrations have argued a range of views on this, and there have been stories that indicated that, in fact, this information is not that new. The Boston Globe reported the other day, and this is from a paragraph in that Boston Globe story on the 28th, a search of public records, government documents posted on the Internet, congressional testimony, guidelines for bank examiners, and even an executive order President Bush signed in 2001, September of that year, describe how U.S. authorities have openly sought new tools to track terrorist financing since 2001.
Right.
As
I said,
getting access to this information. So the point being, there's been a lot of discussion about this in public ways before. This article was more specific in terms of how this process works.
From classified
documents.
But
there was not any a bold new revelation in this particular story.
Now, what if, say, the Weekly World News finds out that Osama's living on the moon and they've got the exclusive photos and this is real? I mean,
for a change.
Does it behoove them to go to the government before publishing something like that?
Well, you're using the hyperbole here to make an argument that is an interesting one. But I think in cases like this, the journalists have a significant obligation to weigh seriously the consequences of what we publish. We should do that every day in every story.
We should
recognize that our primary obligation is to gather the information that leads to reporting the truth and then make decisions on how to report it. In some instances, we hold back on that. The example you gave of the New York Times or another major news organization knew the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden.
They should hold
back. And there was a strike coming up against bin Laden. We shouldn't
think they would hold
that.
Back.
Just as many times, news organizations hold back information about battlefield tactics until after a particular battle or a particular incident takes place.
Now, they're
not
required
for journalists to hold back. In critical situations, certain information.
Bob, they're not required to do that by law, though, are they? I mean, they can tell the government, we need to sell some papers this week.
That's correct, that the courts up through the Supreme Court have made decisions in terms of the nature of prior restraint. And in our country, thank God, in our country here in the United States, we have the ability of freedom of the press to be able to publish information. We can suffer consequences if we get it wrong. There are laws that penalize and punish journalists if we get it wrong. And the government can challenge journalists and news organizations if they wish, in the courts or publicly. And that makes for a healthy democracy. But let us not ever have a situation where there's suppression of information based on the government deciding what should be published and who should be doing it. One of the U.S. senators, Bunning from Kentucky, earlier this week had suggested that the New York Times was guilty of treason in this particular situation, and others have suggested the New York Times have its press privileges pulled in a case like this. Well, that's really absurd in the notion of the spirit of a democracy, and to argue that, of course, would completely undermine the arguments of this administration and any U.S. government administration about freedom of the press in countries around the world.
Different subject, Bob, but something I want to get your opinion on that's bugging me a little bit is this.
I want to know which energy drink he's on.
Yeah, it's amazing, amazing. It's news people that are treating some things as news that I feel maybe aren't. Recently, CNN gave Angelina Jolie basically a whole day to do what she wanted with their website and their whole network just for an exclusive interview. Is treating Angelina Jolie as news and basically giving her a 24 hours to do whatever cause she wants, is that good journalism?
Well, I didn't see it, so I can't offer that kind of assessment on it. My sense is that pieces of what goes on in our society and in popular culture, to some individuals are news, but we should have the proper tone and proportion. The way you've described it to me is not the way I would have made those decisions and how much time to be given in that story.
Hey, Bob, I can't. This is a very serious issue. Liberty, civil rights, constitutional law, First Amendment rights. But I just can't help but hear your voice and think that, my God, you'd make a great phone sex operator. Could you describe what you're wearing? They're pleated trousers with a razor-sharp pleat, a blue shirt with a tie, choked tight but not restrictive around my neck. I mean, you just,
That's Spike. I'm sorry,
sorry
for that, Bob.
I'm mesmerized over here. I'm getting...
Well, Bob has... You are obviously amazing at reading and learning how to do all of this stuff, and you obviously have looked at it from all angles. Some people would still say, Bob, that you're sort of being a patsy for the left, and that the New York Times has a ruthless history of going after the president, and that they actually go after him. And you said it's up for arguing. We can't actually know if this in fact will help them or not. It's arguable, right?
Well, that's right. We don't know that. And the danger in cases like this is to draw a vertical line down the middle of the paper and say this is all about liberals and conservatives. It isn't. It's a horizontal line. It's a spectrum. It's much more complex. The Wall Street Journal, as you know, also published a story on this particular issue of the international banking transactions. They say it's not the same as the New York Times story, but it is very similar in many ways. And of course, the Wall Street Journal will never be confused ideologically with the New York Times. So it's a much more complex issue than one should just drop down and say it's a matter of liberal, conservative, or Democrat, Republican. And my views, your views also are often nuanced and complex on these particular matters.
One other quick thing, Bob. Good night and good luck. Should that be required viewing for all journalists? Did you see the George Clooney movie?
I did. I think it's a fascinating and meaningful movie. I think it's great viewing for all citizens of this country because it not only speaks to the power of the press when journalism is done well, but it speaks to the power of the corruption of the press when those in the counting house are making decisions based on economics as opposed to public service.
All right, Bob Steele, thank you very much. I hope you'll take our call again. But Spike did get you to laugh, right?
Nervously.
Could you just say power of nuance again for me one more time before you go?
Bob Steele in Denver, Colorado. Thank you, sir.
So long, gentlemen.
Right. Louis C.K. has gone from doing open mic nights in Boston to having his own HBO sitcom, Lucky Louis. Of course, there have been a lot of hard work and stops in between. Louis has appeared on Leno, Letterman, Conan, worked for Conan, won an Emmy for his work on The Chris Rock Show. He's done multiple HBO specials. He's one of the hottest comics in the world and has headlined all the biggest comedy clubs and festivals, as well as worked on many films. Now with Lucky Louis, he stars in the first HBO comedy to be filmed multi-camera style in front of a live studio audience. Spike has seen it, says it's outrageous. Did you say it was like the Honeymooners if they could swear?
Well, it's like the Honeymooners if they could swear, and Ralph had a serious was recovering from a serious drug problem.
Ah.
And Trixie was a nymphomaniac.
Louis C.K., welcome back to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning.
How are you? It's a fantastic thrill to be doing this show, I imagine, right?
I'm having the best time in the world. It's the best job I ever could have had.
Do you enjoy being able to take things farther on an HBO show? I mean, you've got behind you legendary shows like Sopranos, Sex and the City. You get to explore things you couldn't explore on network television.
It's true, and it's funny because even though it seems like we're taking things farther, to me we're just bringing stuff closer to home because it just makes the show more honest, you know? It makes you able to really... I think that other shows, other networks actually make you go farther away from
reality
that's real or interesting or compelling.
You mean when you say have to say things like, ah, fiddlesticks.
Yeah, I mean, the language is one thing. That's,
yeah, my grandfather didn't even try that one.
Yeah.
When I watch, well, fiddlesticks is actually pretty harsh.
You hit with a fiddlestick, it's going to hurt.
Sure, what I understand.
A couple years ago when we talked to you, Louie, you were getting ready to maybe have a network show. There was a pilot out there and everything. It's probably a blessing for you that never went through. You wouldn't
That's
have
great.
Been able to do that, the kind of show you're doing.
That's right. And actually, it was great. It worked perfectly because I learned how to do a pilot and star and create something at the same time on a network. And, you know, it was much harder over there because of all the stuff we had to do for their benefit. But I learned, I had that experience, and now I'm using that experience in HBO, but on a show that I actually want to be in. So.
That's neat. And now, all the other stuff, of course, I'm sure keeps you busy. Are you still, are you slowing down the road schedule at all, or are you still going to go out there? Because I'll tell you what, the life of a comic, people think it's easy because they see you just flick for like an hour. And they think, wow, man, I'd love to have a job where I could jump on stage, 10,000 people love me for an hour, and then I'm done. But tell them a little bit about it. And also, when you first got started, you were, like, doing open mic nights and struggling, and it didn't go easy at first, did it?
Yeah, no, it took me a while to start getting any kind of laughs, and I sputtered a lot. But, and then I started to really pick up steam in the 80s when everybody else did. And then in the 90s, all the clubs closed, and I was... You know, I had a lot of rough patches, but it's still easier than a real job. It's still better. It's still
like
1 hour a night at the most.
That's it.
But, I mean, when I'm doing the show, that's a lot more. That's, like 15-hour days for, a good half a year of production.
Right.
This part, no, I'm still on the road. I was just in Minneapolis and Columbus and Indianapolis and all the Annapolises.
All the Annapolises. Annapolis. And
Metropolis.
Yeah. And you got to get up early and do radio and stuff, but you get most of your day to yourself, But I've been working a lot to promote the show and on TV and stuff, so. Yeah,
for coming up with material, do you read the newspaper? Do you just sit back alone quietly, or do you sit down and actually work on it?
I never work on it like that. I never write anything down. Like, nothing of my act on stage is written anywhere. It's just stuff that's floating around in my head. But I've learned that if you're sort of trying to think of jokes, you're probably thinking of pretty crappy ones. Most of the stuff I do on stage that works is stuff that are there feelings and thoughts that I've had that I just kind of blurt out and refine them from show to show.
Made a lot of movies, short ones and long ones, independent ones, all kinds. What do you think of this, like, YouTube phenomenon where anybody now can make a movie and have the whole world see it?
I think it's great because I always loved short films because short films are just sort of inspired moments. They don't have the onus of, like, the story of a feature film. I mean, I like feature films that are like that, too. Like, David Lynch is one of my favorite filmmakers. And if you look at his films, he has, like, a bunch of YouTube collections in, 2 hours. But, no, I think it's great that people can just have a video camera and throw some crap together and put it up. And if somebody else gets off on it, it's passed around.
Hey, Louis, when you worked with Conan O'Brien, I know you did some of my favorite stuff ever on that show, including you were the lips of Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Did you have to prepare yourself? Did you blow a lot of money, mistreat women? How'd you get ready for that segment?
Well, I'm a big boxing fan, and Tyson, back then he was great. And then he just became a ridiculous character with a tiny voice. the fact that a guy who could beat the crap out of people would, you know, I'm going to kick your ass, you know, just to get beaten up by a dude who talks like Elmer Fudd.
Do you think America is going to be ready when Conan takes that chair in a couple years, couple, 3 years?
Oh, sure. I don't think, Conan is like the smartest guy in show business. He's so smart, and he really, you know, just the fact that he took Letterman slot from nothing, from having not done it before.
Right, and he took it from the first few days he was on. Everybody said, well, this isn't going to last.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, that was a big learning experience for me to be on a show that's just besieged by not only bad reviews, but it was the kind of show where the reviews come, the reviewers write a second review. Like, no, seriously, get this off the air. like, everybody wrote at least two. And he just kept going and kept moving and kept refining the show and doing his job and not taking it to heart. So, you know, good for him. And now he's been there for, what, 13 years?
Yeah.
So the fact that he's going to be taking The Tonight Show after, like, 15 years on at 12:30, that's, you know, he'll be fine.
Amazing stuff. Do you have a current favorite observation? I'm not going to call it a joke because, you know, jokes are contrived, but current favorite current events that you are looking at and shaking your head at, and, you know, maybe it's Rush Limbaugh being busted for doctor shopping Viagra or some of the crazy things that are going on in politics?
I don't know. I'm not paying attention much to what's going on. I always, like, have a six-month lag to reacting to things. I'm still amazed that Dick Cheney shot somebody in the face and nobody's talking about it.
Oh, that's got some shelf life, doesn't it?
Yeah. I know, and, yeah. And the person he shot had to apologize to him.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Dick Cheney's doing all kinds of... I actually was in Washington, D.C., and I drove past his house, and there's a cop on the front yard playing with his dog, like throwing a ball for Dick Cheney's dog. Hmm. And I looked at the dog, and I realized the dog thinks he's that cop's dog. He does, you know, because he loves that cop, plays with him every day. And then occasionally he's forced to sit with Dick Cheney and probably lick cottage cheese off of his private. He's the kind of guy you look at and you know he's doing some dirty, dirty thing.
Beady little eye.
I hope your taxes are in order, dude.
That's right. Yeah, well, you know, come get me.
Louis, now was it Say-K and you just changed it to make it easier to pronounce?
Yeah, more or less.
And also, maybe you wouldn't get, you could have some anonymity, which I just blew, maybe, I don't know.
Something like that, but that's blown out of the water because people print my last name everywhere.
Louis C.K. in New York. Louis, congratulations on the show. Let's put up some information about it on our website for anybody who can't write it down now on HBO, Sundays at 10:30. Take care.
Thank you. Wonderful feeling, wonderful
day. Are we keeping Rush on hold? Oh, let's talk to him. Rush Limbaugh on the phone with us now. Hello, Rush. Hello?
Good morning.
How are you doing, Rush?
I am fabulous. I am enjoying the benefits of a hard-working American lifestyle, and I cannot wait to start the celebration.
Are you flying to the Dominican Republic?
I'm already here. I landed this morning.
All right.
I pre-recorded my Excellence in Broadcasting telecast for today, and I'm already just lying back, enjoying the sunshine, just all the fruits of the hard-working American lifestyle are mine to enjoy.
So, in the Dominican Republic.
Yes, that's where I choose to spend my recreational time.
Even.
And I hope that you'll understand that that's my choice and my American freedom to do so. Oh, Clayton, hold on a second, please.
Sure.
Yes, I'm Dr. Marcus Welby. I'm that right now. Thank you very much.
Rush is getting a package.
Anyway, as I was saying...
Wait a minute, Bob, Rush, did you just sign something for Dr. Marcus Welby?
No. Don't be ridiculous. That was just some mango I ordered from room service.
Okay.
You choose to leave the country, huh?
Well, I choose to go where I'm most appreciated, and currently, I'm most appreciated outside the borders of the United States. I feel honored to have been asked to be the Grand Marshal of this year's Dominican Republic Flotilla to Freedom.
Wow.
Yes, so these hardworking Dominicans will float toward the United States however they can muster up, whether in a floating automobile, an inflatable raft, two mannequins strapped together that I'm no longer using, whatever it takes, they'll make their way to freedom, and I get to master of ceremony this wonderful and inspiring event. Oh, one more second, please, if I could.
Rush Limbaugh going to the door again.
Yes, I'm Dr. Borden Swanson. I'd be glad to sign that for you.
Swanson?
Thank you very much. I'm sorry for the constant interruptions.
Sure. So there's been a lot of speculation about why you go to the Dominican Republic. Now, I'm sure you've heard of the nasty resorts down there that probably more of us would expect Bill Clinton to go to than perhaps you.
Well, nasty is in the mind of the beholder, don't you think? I think if something isn't illegal, whose right is it to pass judgment on this or any other interest? I firmly believe that these fine people of the Dominican Republic, they know how to have a good time. They're hardworking people who enjoy their recreational time.
So,
please hold, if I could, please, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I am, thank you. Oh, he looks so nervous.
Burrow?
And there's a co-star arrived. Fabulous.
Wait a minute.
Fabulous.
You've just had a burrow delivered to your room.
No, not at all. It's complimentary when you rent a suite here.
Yeah.
At the Viva La Vixen Escort Resort Community.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about the Dominican Republic. I know they roll some fine cigars, almost on par with Cuba. Do you partake?
I would expect Rushbow to enjoy a fine cigar.
I love
yeah.
a fine cigar. Mm-hmm. But I like my cigars smuggled into the United States, as they have been for generations and generations. Oh, yeah, sorry again for the interruption.
All right.
Why, yes, I am George Clooney. I'll take those. Thank you very much. Oh, it's very sweet of you.
Jesus, this is very busy at your door there, Rush.
Well, you know, it is a holiday weekend.
You're stocking up,
and you've just got there.
But the sun is shining, the waves are crashing upon the beach. My Ling and Chu Mong, they're here waiting for me to show me a wonderful Dominican Republican weekend.
Chu Mong.
Just wonderful.
Chu Mong sounds like a creature in Star Wars, you know.
Oh, a lovely thing. Yeah. You're what now? 18 and a half? Wonderful. Super.
Yeah, are you sure both those girls are 18 now?
I checked their Wisconsin state driver's license myself. Oh, let me get that. Oh, please hold.
Sure.
Oh, look. Oh. She looks so nervous. Don't worry, little one. I don't weigh as much as I look. Oh, just go in the other room there for just a moment, yes. I'll be with you shortly.
Rush Limbaugh on vacation already for the 4th of July.
Sounds
huh?
like he's having a big barbecue.
Yeah.
Rush,
do you think your devoted audience might be put off or even disturbed by this surprising lifestyle that you seem to be leading? I mean, you know, I've been on the phone with you for about 10 minutes now, and I don't hear a lot of conservative family values.
Well, Bob, I would just like to ask my audience to just have faith in our legal system, to remember that you're innocent until proven guilty in this country, and with the legal team I've assembled, I'll never be proven guilty of anything. Oh, please hold faith. Hello, good morning, ladies. What's a lovely sarong you're wearing. No, go ahead, take it off. Feel free. What a country.
It's warm down there.
It is very warm.
What a country.
Getting hotter by the second.
The Dominican Republic. All right. This latest trouble that you have, by the way, they're actually trying to decide whether they're going to charge you again with doctor shopping, because it's a form of doctor shopping. You mentioned something about your legal team. You've got, would you call them the dream team or the wet dream team? I don't know.
I'm going to steal that like I've stolen all of your song parodies.
So you feel pretty safe, though. Your legal team's going to get you off.
Well, that's expense I hadn't thought of incurring, but if they're willing to go the distance, I'm willing to pay whatever it takes.
Okay.
Oh, listen, I've got to go. The doorbell just rings off the hook.
Oh. Got no hope. I know lady wrong. Ain't got no home. I know face wrong. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home. I got a voice. I love to sing. I sing like a girl. And I sing like a frog. I'm a lonely boy. Biggest pot bust. Biggest pot bust. Biggest pot bust. Biggest pot bust. One of the biggest pot busts in history. Our nation's history. Right here in the Northwest.
I am in from D.C. Choppers full. I don't want to give the story away.
Don't want to give the story away. By the way, I was referring to this earlier, our Canadian border, and they are watching general aviation like a hawk. you don't want to be flying stuff in, and that's exactly what happened, right?
They've been flying it in for years, and as of yesterday, the government announced that Operation Frozen Timber...
Now, see, I thought Operation Frozen Timber was customs stopping Rush Limbaugh from bringing Viagra in.
It's halted. Operation Halted Timber.
It was an operation where they put cameras out in the middle of the wilderness and like up in the North Cascades and stuff, and got these guys coming in on helicopters with huge amounts of pot strapped.
For some of you, this will be a very bummer, a bit of a bummer, this story, for the holiday weekend. I don't know how, you know, I have mixed feelings on pot. You know, my stand on pot is pretty clear, you think?
Or you don't?
It's a little hazy, it's a little fuzzy.
I have a hard time remembering it sometimes.
Yeah, and that's your stand.
No, I know your stand is basically that you don't take it.
I couldn't. It's very harmful to me. Unlike Clinton, I went a little further than he did.
You moved west and found real pot and found out, wow, that, you know, that weak stuff I had back east was okay, but this real
I've never
stuff.
Talked about any of that. No, actually, what it is some people, it freaks them out. It makes them paranoid. It can be very harmful. You know, a lot of people have come up to me and said, yeah, man, I know exactly what you mean, and they say it's a very harmless thing. On the other hand, I don't think it does anywhere near as much damage as alcohol does. So the idea that you could put people in jail for one thing, and then the more harmful thing, which alcohol really is like sponsoring the Super Bowl. To me, it just seems a little hypocritical. So those of you who want legalization, I'm actually on your side for legalization, because I'd like to tax the crap out of it and fix our schools.
On the sure, for the reefer high.
Reefer high.
The sheer economics of how many people are in behind bars because of it, too.
Yeah, and they're putting the people in jail for that when there's lots of other people going free who should be in, you know, all of that. But be that as it may, it's quite illegal. And now... A huge influx, a huge point of entry has been stopped here in the Northwest. There were campsites, hikers, fishermen, park rangers complaining near the Bellingham area of mysterious helicopters zooming through the North Cascades forests. These choppers would land near campsites. According to federal agents, the helicopters stuffed with hundreds of pounds of potent Canadian marijuana, destined for the lucrative market along the Interstate 5 corridor, were coming in this way. U.S. and Canadian law enforcement officials Thursday revealed the existence of a large-scale airborne smuggling scheme on the northern border. Here's how much pot they got. Ka-ching, 4 tons. Wow. Ton is like 2,000 pounds. Eric, how much is a ton?
Exactly 2,000 pounds.
Just like 2,000 pounds. Yeah.
Now, you know that because you were a drug
dealer
once.
Grams are in the ton.
Yeah. Eric knows it because he remembers things, weights, and measures.
I just cried when I heard this story.
U.S. and Canadian law enforcement officials said they have 4 tons of pot, 800 pounds of cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Canadians make cocaine?
The Canadians take cocaine. They were trading.
Trading coke for pot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And $1.5 million in cash. At least 46 people have been arrested in the United States and Canada. Agents describe a brazen smuggling operation in the Pasayton Wilderness area. I don't know where that is.
That is the Northern Cascades towards the east. Pasayton Wilderness is
okay,
up.
Okay, really? Yeah, yeah. And there was a bust there a year or two ago. Wasn't there a lake where the part of the... It's like the... You know, the girls' camp is on one side and the pot camp is on the other side.
They bring a float plane in.
That's a happy camp.
There was a lake right on the border that was doing this as well.
A Soyuz, I think that was.
That's right. Anyway, the two-year investigation had potential national security significance. They thought the smugglers could be flying in terrorists or weapons. And I told you, back when 9/11 happened, remember what I said? I said, guess what? It's going to be really hard to get pot. Because they're going to tighten the borders for terrorists, and really all they're going to find is like tons of pot.
Well, 4 tons is what they found.
4 tons.
You nailed it.
A scheme of this magnitude is a stark reminder about why we must be vigilant with our borders, said Homeland Security Assistant Secretary Julie Myers. Yeah, bite me, Julie. Go get Osama, okay?
What are you talking about?
Leave Tommy Chong alone and go get Osama.
Well, they weren't looking for Tommy Chong. Tommy Chong was just so stoned that he fumbled into their little trap there.
You know what I'm saying, though?
You're looking for bombs and guns, dude.
Who's with me?
Little prissy Miss Missy, you've never smoked pot.
I know, but I'm thinking I should start.
No. No. Oh, God. That's my biggest fear. Now she thinks she didn't have enough of a childhood of screwing up, and now she's going to start doing it now. Don't do that.
I don't have any street cred. Got nothing. Got to go out on the weekends and take shots of tequila just to make up for it. That's not doing the job.
Well, maybe you can try it once. I tried it once in Thailand just to see what it would do. It didn't do anything, and now I'm fine.
You're the only guy in the world who got bunk pot in Thailand. That is amazing.
So we should send Casey to Vancouver where she can do this legally if she really wants to try this.
You can't smoke marijuana legally in Vancouver, can you?
Yeah, you can.
No, don't do it, really, seriously. Yeah. Smoke in your lungs. You're a marathon runner.
Come on.
You're an athlete.
So what? I'd come back. I'd be so relaxed. You guys wouldn't have to deal with the normal female stuff because I'd just be like, hey, man.
Yeah. It's an easier way to take care of that problem, by the way.
Yeah, there's another way to take care of that problem, but I don't want to be creepy, so I'm not going to tell you what it is. All I'm saying is when I was young, I had a nice body, and I enjoyed it.
Right. That's what it's all about.
Oh, my God.
Make foolish mistakes there. Yes, go ahead, Eric.
Actually, I had a conversation about that very thing with Casey yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And we both decided that on the one hand, it would probably be good for her, but then to talk about it in theory and to actually make it happen are two very different things.
I can't believe it. You know what? Eric, please never talk about sex on our show.
Okay.
That was hotter than Bob Steele, dude. Yeah. Moist.
And if Spike starts to think you're hot, we're going to have him examined, too. Okay. No, you're completely shielded from all of this stuff. Let's see. Here's what happened. The marijuana industry, by the way, in British Columbia, estimated at $7 billion by Forbes magazine. Now, what's astonishing about this to me is that there's someone who works at Forbes whose job it is to try Canadian pot.
Or at least count the buds as they come over the
border. It's a sound investment.
And it's the most lucrative agricultural product of Canada. Did you know that?
You're kidding me.
Pot is the most lucrative agricultural product. Now, we have...
That can't be right.
We have some Canadians listening. I know we do. Did you, Canadians listening to us now, and we don't have too many, but if there's a few of you out there, did you know that your most lucrative vegetable was turning us into vegetables?
That can't be right.
Oh, yeah.
That can't be right.
It absolutely is. Hold on, let me say the number for the Canadians. 1-800-252-1025A.
Okay.
1-800-252-1025. Any Canadian out there want to tell me if that's news to you or you knew it all along?
The timber industry in Canada? The wheat industry of the plains of central Canada?
This is British Columbia.
British Columbia.
Not all of Canada.
This is
British
the province
Columbia.
Of British Columbia. Their number one export. Their number
Actually,
one
no, that's not what Forbes said. At $7 billion, marijuana is the most lucrative agricultural product of Canada.
More than their fishing industry? I mean,
for pound, pot costs more than fish.
Yeah, even that good king salmon.
1-800-252-1025. Let's take calls from Canada. Tom, Vancouver Island. Hello, Tom.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
I'm good, eh? How are you?
I'm all right.
Could you do me a favor, Canadian people? Thicken up your Canadian accent for us, just for fun.
Good day.
So, I was down at the park, and just kind of strolling down the sidewalk. Uh-huh. Guys just walking down the street, and they got these puffing. They're just puffing, no problem. It's you can actually walk around here. Cops will turn a blind eye to it most of the time, especially if it's just a couple guys smoking a joint or two. They're more concerned about the grow-ops. And I don't know how many grow-ops there are in this town, but...
Well, how concerned could they be about the grow-ops if pot is, to the Canadian economy... This is interesting, by the way. This is like Amsterdam, in a sense. If pot to the Canadian economy is such a huge part of while your dollar is doing better, by the way, which really ticks me off when I come up there... Then they should not. They wouldn't want to stop the grow ops.
No, they wouldn't. They're shutting them down. This town here, we've had I think four in the last week or so. 2,500 plants, and they're ripping apart whole apartment buildings. The whole second floor of an apartment building in Vancouver was a grow op.
It is Canada's biggest agricultural product. And I know actually why they would want to shut it down now that I think about it.
Why?
Because it's because it's a tax evasion.
And everybody does it here. Like, I'm talking like lawyers, like adults, kids. It's everywhere. Like North Island, North Vancouver Island, it's, I don't know what percentage, but it's got to be 20-25% of the people are smoking it.
1-800-252-1025 to our Canadian listeners. Canada now has announced, Forbes has announced, marijuana is its biggest agricultural product. How does that affect you? Are you surprised? Dave in Victoria.
Yes, Dave here.
Is this Dave?
This is Dave.
come on.
Good day.
Dave's not here.
Dave's always here. I've been listening to you guys for like 10 years, man, forever. This is crazy. I've never got through before. I basically wake and bake. I hit the bong in the morning.
Hit the bong, then the radio. Well, we appreciate you thinking of it.
Yeah.
If you tried the radio first, then the bong, you might get through more.
Before I go to work.
All right. Did you know that pot was Canada's number one agricultural product?
I figured as much because everybody's making money off it. I'm making money off it. All my friends are making money off it. That's what it's about.
A boot.
So Canada is a boat. It's a
boot money.
Boot. To boot that.
Should Canada just make it legal?
Yeah, I think we should. Government controls it, sells it like cigarettes. Works a lot better. We make more money. Great jobs.
Well, the government would get a lot in taxes, of course. Would you go completely legitimate if it was legal? Open a little shop up there in Victoria?
Ooh, I don't know. That would be all right. You know, yeah. You never know, really.
Okay.
I like the way things are going now. Everything works well.
Dave likes it illegal.
Tax free,
dude.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Dave. 1-800-252-1025. First they tried to go through us, then they tried to go around us, then they tried to go under us, now they try going over us, says the special agent in charge for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's true. They've dug tunnels. They've snuck through bushes until we found out that infrared does a fantastic job. It does an even better job if you're baked. Infrared. You have a little more of a glow about
brain
you.
Brain is so warm.
Targets of Operation Frozen Timber closely resembled a smuggling operation that was detailed last year in Playboy magazine. Smugglers boasted of making $20 million a year after expenses and of being better than FedEx in terms of reliably and absolutely positively overnight delivery. Douglas in Victoria. Douglas.
Hello.
You're up.
Hey, listen, I think maybe... America doesn't really want, I mean, the general public maybe, but, you know, that's a good point of what you said about the borders.
The borders.
Really, you know, it could be that you guys really don't want us to have that pot, and so, you know, it's a good way to...
You have to speak up, Douglas.
Oh, sorry. American, you know, thoughts on pot are very conservative. Let's just put it that way.
We're very conservative on a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's lots of conservativeness in many aspects of life, but the actual, you know, money that's being sort of put underground is sort of ugly to most.
It's
governments.
An unbelievable amount of money, and it is all underground, Douglas.
Absolutely.
Did you know that pot was the number one? It sounds like you did, but did you know that was the number one crop?
Not in Canada. I did know that. As far as BC went, but it's not really that surprising. You've got to realize there's only 30 million people in Canada. And two-thirds of the whole population live within 300 miles of Toronto.
I see the connection.
Most people don't know that.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Ian, hello.
Hello there, Bob. I had at one point, and then I turned around and said, well, isn't this just like Prohibition? Where you guys cut off the alcohol, we supplied all your alcohol. You cut off the pot, we supply all your pot.
I think the parallels to Prohibition with pot are valid.
Hmm?
Did you know it was your number one crop?
I knew it was the number one crop 10 years ago.
Does it make you proud of Canada?
Yes, because I'm telling you exactly what you said before. Mm-hmm. It's a lot less dangerous than alcohol.
Time to change the leaf on your flag to something a little more appropriate.
Hey, you guys put my flag upside down one time at a hockey game.
We did?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Mike might be able to tell you that.
Sorry, bro.
Thank you. I love the new flag idea.